Coming up on this episode of DL Weekly, Buena Vista Street has opened, Walt and Mickey have a refreshed look, Avengers Campus updates,
new food in DCA, Grad Night 2021 update, we talk to Liberty about her recent trip to Walt Disney World, and more. DL Weekly starts now.
Welcome to DL Weekly, a podcast about Walt's original Magic Kingdom, Disneyland. We cover the latest news and information from the resort, test our skills at trivia, and have a discussion about the parks every week. We invite you to send in your feedback and stories. Our contact information can be found at dlweekly.net. Now sit back, keep your hands and arms inside the podcast, and enjoy this week's show.
And welcome to this episode of DL Weekly for the week of November 25th, 2020. I'm Teg Bushman.
And I'm Teresa Urban. We would like to send a shout out and, of course, a huge thank you to Jesus L. and Stephanie F. for supporting the show. This support helps make DL Weekly possible. Our supporter Discord chat has been an amazing source of Disney magic since the park shut down earlier this year. We have all sorts of fun things. This past weekend, we actually did like a Friendsgiving type Zoom call with weekly tiers. We have a gift exchange coming up, all sorts of fun holiday magic, and just Disney magic in general. So if you'd like to learn more about how to become a weekly tier, head on over to dealweekly.net/support to sign up.
Our friends over at All Enchanting Ears are having a Black Friday through Cyber Monday sale. The entire shop will be 25% off plus free shipping on all orders over $35. Now is a great time to get that pair of ears you've been looking at, or get another fun mask to stay safe for the holidays, or some great coasters to protect your furniture. I have all of these things. The sky is the limit. Head on over to allenchantingears.com to get started. That is where our beautiful ear hats and ears came from this week.
And if that's not enough, our DL Weekly store is also having a Cyber Week sale. It runs all the way through Black Friday and Cyber Monday, which, of course, as we all know, are some of the most important sales days of the year. But all t-shirts and everything else is up to 35% off. Remember to go check it all out at dlweekly.net/store.
Now let's get to the news. Buena Vista Street has reopened and guests have descended upon the resort to step foot inside of a Disney park again. For those who may go in the near future, you will have to pay $10 to park in the downtown Disney parking lot. Stores are capped at 25% per state mandate, so be prepared to wait. To actually get access to Buena Vista Street, guests must wait in a queue or scan a daily changing QR code to join the virtual queue. Once you get inside, there are also waits to enter all of the shops, but who cares about that because you're inside a Disney park again.
It is very exciting, but it was good to see people saying, you know, and warning people that, you know, yes, it's exciting, but please be prepared to wait. It's also always good to know things like this before you go, so you're not thinking, I'm just going to run in, run out, and it'll be all smooth and easy.
I don't think anybody expected to run in and run out, at least this early
no,
in the season.
No, but you know what I mean. Like, I'm just going to head over here and head over here. You know, there are waits for all the things. It did sound like the line was at some points like hours and hours long to get in. So be patient. It will happen. The other thing to remember, too, we were talking about this because we were discussing what our thoughts on if Main Street would open. Another thing to kind of be conscientious of as well is if you do have a chance to go to Buena Vista Street, remember the time that you're in there is also time that another guest can't be in there. So kind of be conscious of that.
Don't just hang out all day.
As much as we would love to like spend all day enjoying and just soaking up the little bit of Disney Park that we can, you know, we also need to be
mindful of others.
So, and again, it was kind of one step forward, five steps backward with the reopening of this just because of the timing. Like we talked about before, the county did slip back. So restrictions did get stricter as they did open Buena Vista Street. So unfortunately, yes, they're open. They just can't have as many people in there, but still super exciting.
Yeah, it's neat to actually see inside of a Disney park again that's on the West Coast. The fact that people, as we'll talk about later in our news, are able to get closer to certain things that we wanted to know the status of. The fact that people could go in and eat Disney food again and just be in the aura that's not just downtown Disney.
Yes, just amazing. I am very happy for everyone that has been able to go visit Buena Vista Street or that's going sometime soon. I just feel like what an extra dose of Disney magic. Yes, we know downtown Disney is fantastic, but you know, this is actually inside of the gates on the other side of the turnstiles.
I'm crossing my fingers. Main Street's next.
Main Street, I think, will happen. I do think logistically it's a little bit tougher to work out. And I think if they decide to open Main Street, when they decide to open Main Street, I do think it would be in their best interest to do some sort of like virtual something to like get tickets to be able to and maybe have like designated time slots, because you and I would 100% want to stay there the entire day if we could. But again,
are you saying like what they did with Galaxy's Edge when it opened, where you've got your little window and then they kind of like want you to shoo out?
Yep. I think that they should do like with little windows of having people in there to experience things. But then you should also have some sort of like reserve seating or like call ahead, whatever. So kind of like what they're doing for these exclusive shopping events, where you have to go online and reserve your spot.
You know what might be interesting is Main Street's small enough that, with the exception of dining, I guess I'll say, you could just give like a 2-hour window, let a bunch of people in for 2 hours, clear it, let 2 more hours worth of people in, and you could get through a lot more people that
way.
Well,
and it'd be easier to kind of clear too, because it's a smaller spot. But, and you know, it is interesting. Kate in our chat was actually just mentioning this. I do think it would be in Disney's best interest if they could go to some sort of reservation system now to be able to get into Buena Vista Street, just because the lines were crazy. I mean, yes, you do have the virtual queue, but then again, you're just kind of
sitting in downtown Disney, which is also causing a problem.
So I do hope there's some kinks to work out for sure. There's always things that can be done better.
Yeah.
But still just exciting that the gates are opened. With the opening of Buena Vista Street, the Storyteller statue that features Mickey and Walt when first arriving in California has been refurbished. In Disneyland, the Partner statue was also refurbished. Over time, the bronze had oxidized, and because of the applied patina, acrylic polymer, and wax, it required a more intensive process than just a simple cleaning or polishing. So over 4 days, an artisan utilized a process using crushed walnut shells, which is fascinating, but they used the walnut shells to gently strip the figure down to the bare bronze. After cleaning, various chemicals were applied and heated with a blowtorch to create a reaction and fuse with the bronze. The figure was coated in a polymer to protect the patina, then coated with a very thin layer of wax. And holy cow, do they look beautiful.
Did you see this on the Disney Parks blog? This is when
the original
the Partner statue first unveiled. I did not know it was shiny like that.
Yeah, so we did see there's a Facebook page that I follow, Gothic Rosie, and she had someone that was able to peek behind the actual curtains of this process, and she had posted before, two during photos, and then an after photo of the Partner statue, and it was incredible.
I'll put that in our show notes.
I didn't realize how. Like, I don't know. I had forgotten how, like, greenish looking the statue had gotten. I guess I just kind of got used to, oh, well, that's just what the statue looks like. But when they stripped it all down, it was shiny like a new penny. And then as they put the coats of everything on, it got more bronzy looking. And the thing that I think is awesome is how they were able to like make it look like different. They had like Walt's suit's darker. His shirt is lighter. His face is lighter than his hair. I love the variations in color that the statue now has to accentuate different things.
I didn't realize how green and oxidized the statue had become. And the fact that it looked like a shiny penny in the beginning, again, I had never seen it when it first was put there. Because what was that, 94? 93.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's been a long time. And then, you know, they shined it up and they did some stuff. And then now it looks interesting. So
it looks fantastic. I cannot wait to see it in person.
Avengers Campus may not be open at Disney California Adventure at the moment, but you can still pick up your very own Spider-Bot. The Spider-Bot is a tool that Webb, or the Worldwide Engineering Brigade, built to help superheroes. Guests can find this fun toy, along with all new Avengers apparel, at World of Disney or the Backlot Premier Shop, starting on December 4th.
So, I don't think this is something that I need to add to my collection, but watching the video of this thing move, it was interesting.
I didn't even watch the video.
So yeah, let's watch the video real quick. It like goes. It's so funny.
How was that?
There it is. See,
it moves like a little spider.
Yeah,
That's creepy.
I told you, it's like...
That's kind of creepy, actually. We'll put the link in the show notes.
I love the movements of this thing. It's so cool. Oh, you can battle them. With them.
Oh, its head fell off.
Oh, this is awesome. We will put a link to the show notes. Disney Parks blog has a really fun, almost, it kind of looks like a commercial for the spider bots, but I find it hilarious how they move.
they did move funny. I was not expecting the battle, and it's like, you win, and then like the other one's head popped off.
How fun. I think these are going to be super popular. Dare I say, do you think these may be popular, more popular with kids than like droids?
Yes, I think so, because this looks more fun. I don't know. I never was on the droid bandwagon. I never thought that they were worth the price they were charging. Yeah. Maybe if they cut the price in half, I'd be more interested. But I don't know. To me, compared to the build a lightsaber experience, it was like night and day.
Oh,
like,
way different. Yes, way different. With the ability to be in Disney California Adventure, guests have been able to get a closer look at Avengers Campus. Most of the buildings that can be seen from guest accessible areas look in place and nearly complete. With the pace and amount of work being done, this new area could open with the rest of the park sometime next year.
So the only thing that I saw this week about this was that I think it was Mice Chat had some pictures over the wall of the kind of red thing for the mm-hmm. Spider-Man attraction, and the red front is warping again, and they've already replaced it, like totally torn this off and replaced it. And I have a picture up for our live stream folks, and I'll again, this is linked in our show notes as well, that it looks like it's been deformed again. Honestly though, looking at it, like, I don't think if I was there I would even care.
Well, you know, at first, if they wouldn't have pointed it out, I just thought it was how the sun was hitting it in the photo. So I'm curious to know how obvious or how subtle this may be when you're there in person.
Did you see they have Stark painted on the side?
The thing I find amazing anytime, like with Galaxy's Edge, the level of detail that they put into these things is just incredible to me. When we visited Galaxy's Edge for the first time, I just remember being in awe of looking at these things that looked like they were beaten up and had been there for years and years and years, but I knew that they literally just built it. Same thing it looks like with parts of Avengers Campus. There's a like a brick building that has an old faded ad for Stark Industries, and it looks, I just can't imagine how much work went into making this look old.
A lot. A lot of work.
It's crazy.
But that's, you know, that's what they get paid for, is how to do that stuff. And, you know, this area in between these two buildings is where that animatronic awesome, what did they call it? Stunttronic is supposed to be. So that's going to be
There's
super
the big
neat.
Arm for it right there.
Guests that would like to order a drink from Award Wieners can also purchase a green or red Mickey Jingle Bell Glow Cube for just $4.99. For a more upscale dining experience, some of the new options at Carthay Circle might hit the spot. Baked bay scallops, Moroccan roasted chicken meatballs, pumpkin ice cream sundae, and more are available. This stuff sounds very good. Of course, the ornament that I saw that you could get with this looked... So you can get it in red or green, and it lights up, of course. I feel like this could easily be an ornament. Like, you could put a little string on it.
They're adorable. And I do think the new popcorn, there are new popcorn buckets or sippers that are in the same style.
Yes, I saw that
Super
as well.
Super adorable. But from what Disney Food Blog had to say about the food, they did say of the two quick service restaurants, they did suggest visiting Award Wieners over Smoke Jumpers, just because they felt that Award Wieners was better. And it was just Smoke Jumpers just didn't live up to the hype. One thing to note, though, if you guys do decide to go visit Buena Vista Street, and one of the things that you like to do when you were in DCA was to enjoy an adult beverage, you do actually need to purchase food whenever purchasing an alcoholic beverage. Now, you can't just go purchase a drink. So that was one thing that I was kind of not surprised about, but I was just like, oh, you know, okay. It's not something they really mentioned, but just something to kind of be aware of.
Well, some more merchandise they have, too, is they have... Is this from Up? Mm-hmm. Okay, yeah, because they have a grape soda shirt and a pillow.
New ears that have been out, I think, for a couple of weeks now, but we have Sorcerer Mickey ears that I need to have these. These need to be added to my collection. Oh, they're classic.
Oh.
A baby Yoda or the child beanie, which is super cute.
Of course, Country Bear Jamboree ornament.
More ornaments. Mm-hmm.
That's cool.
Tiki room ornaments, of course, the castle ornament.
Oh, that's kind of neat. It's like inside the castle.
One thing to also note, we had mentioned this a few episodes back, that the single mask prices in Walt Disney World had been increased. However, masks have still not been increased at Downtown Disney and in Buena Vista Street. The face masks are still $6 a piece. So if you're planning on getting any of those prints of the original style of masks, do so sooner rather than later, because we're thinking those prices probably will increase.
Some of these Santa hand sanitizer holders are cute. It looks like they have a Mickey balloon one. They have this ice cream one is really cute. What is it? Oh, a Small World one? Teacups? Ooh.
And then, of course, we've got all sorts of different holiday-themed accessories from Bauble Bar. Just some of them are cute. Some of them are a little creepy. I think the Mickey and Minnie earrings are a little creepy.
She looks a little weird. Minnie looks a little weird. Oh, another Star Wars shirt.
Without an opening date for the parks and even knowing if graduation celebrations will be allowed next year, Disneyland has made the decision and has canceled the 2021 grad nights. Disney's statement said, "We know how disappointing this will be to many graduates who will be looking forward to celebrating at the Disneyland Resort, and we thank you for your understanding during these challenging and unprecedented times. We look forward to celebrating your students in years to come."
That's so sad. I know so many people, I mean, in general, right? So students last year lost out on graduation in a lot of cases. Students this year are, depending on where you're at, may or may not be able to do school in person.
Yeah.
And then having your Disney grad night that maybe you've looked forward to maybe your whole life, just not going to work out. So it's a bummer. But
it is a big bummer. It's unfortunate, you know, and the thing that's really like sad and really scary is we don't even know if the parks are going to be. It could be that the parks aren't even open when grad nights typically are going on, which is just crazy to think about.
That'll be over a year.
Yeah, I was going to say that would push them being closed for over a year. The other thing, too, is I do think if they're open by like late spring next year, I don't think that the state will be allowing them to host.
Oh, yeah. No.
Host gatherings like grad night. However, the thing that is kind of sad that is hard to kind of maybe wrap your head around is that it is a ticketed event. It is something that's special, so you could control it a little bit better.
Yeah.
But, it makes sense, even though it is a blow.
Not to mention the fact that we still have tickets to two events that they are rescheduling, supposedly. So,
yep, we have tickets to two events we have tickets to Star Wars Night and Villains Night if those things are still going to happen. I had to push back our Vern and I's wedding a year. So it's just been a crazy, crazy, crazy year.
Disney fans have been very excited about the Mickey and Minnie's Runaway Railway toys available at McDonald's as part of the Happy Meal order. However, in just the last couple of days, the toys have been pulled from the restaurants. The QR codes that are used to register to win a Walt Disney World trip are having some issues, and new toys without the codes are on the way to the restaurants now and should be in stock again soon. This is very important to me and Teresa because we have been going around trying to get all these toys. I have a collection of four. You have four now, right?
We have the same four.
So, and I know there's a bunch of people in our chat, and we've had a lot of streams in the last few days, and every stream we've talked about these toys. So I know there's a lot of people excited for these. So I'm hoping that within the next couple of days, we can go back and try to get some more toys.
I think we'll be able to. It makes me kind of question, because I did try scanning one of the QR codes on my ticket, and it just took me to a blank page and said that the link couldn't, I don't know, some sort of error message. So nothing too major. So I just went to the website and manually typed in the code, because the code is still printed on the ticket. I didn't find it to be that big of a deal.
No.
However, it did say also that there were some unintended search results. So I'm kind of wondering if the bigger problem may have been the unintended search results happened to be. Because again, this is a children's toy.
Yeah.
So who knows where that may have led to. But unfortunately, yes, there is a pause. It's just been so much fun. Like, I don't know. I
haven't had a Happy Meal in like 15 years.
I forgot how excited, like, how exciting Happy Meals were, just because, like, you get, like, right, you've got this whole collection. There's 10 different toys that you could maybe get. And, of course, everyone has their favorites, because that's just how it goes, right?
Mm-hmm.
Or maybe there's, like, you just need one more to get your collection. It's kind of a rush to, like, okay, get it and like open it and see what you got or whatever. It's like finding the golden ticket from like Willy Wonka's Chocolate Factory or something. It's so much fun. Speaking of fun, once again, a new Disney Paper Parks creation has been posted online. This time it celebrates the unveiling of the Castle of Magical Dreams, which just debuted in Hong Kong Disneyland. The cool thing about this version is there are two versions, an easy and a hard. Also, we somehow missed the last of the Happy Haunts Disney Paper Parks from the end of October, which features Madame Leota. Links are available in our show notes. It features Madame Leota, and I think it has the ballroom scene, too. I was checking these out earlier today.
Well, there you go. So the Castle of Magical Dreams is kind of interesting because, for those of you who don't know or aren't aware, the Castle of Magical Dreams, well, in Hong Kong, their castle was Disneyland's castle, mm-hmm. and they determined that it was too small and they wanted something to differentiate it or whatever. So they renovated the castle and actually built onto it. So now, not only is it Sleeping Beauty's castle still the shape in the front, but it's huge, it's very tall, and they have added all this stuff on there, and it's the Castle of Magical Dreams because it's a bunch of princesses' castles all kind of combined.
So it's interesting because when I first saw the castle, I wasn't all of a sudden like oh, it's amazing. You know, I wasn't blown away by it. However, the more I read about it and the more I see all of the details about it, the more I like it. The other thing, too, so this unveiling was on the 15-year anniversary for the park as well. I thought that was pretty fun. Mm-hmm. So it's kind of a mashup of a bunch of different Disney castles. So I think because it doesn't have a traditional castle look, I think that's kind of why it's not like what we were expecting when they first unveiled it.
Yeah.
But I do think it's interesting because like this. So I was reading, I think on the Disney Parks blog, this right here, this is Mulan and that's actually Mushu.
Oh, that's cool.
Isn't that fun? So like,
I could probably zoom in more on that.
The more detail. So So right here, this little like pinkish, reddish, whatever color it is, tower here that has a gold figure on top, that tower represents Mulan and that's actually Mushu on top of it. And I think all of the towers have some sort of a something on it to represent their princess. So it's just really interesting to me. Like I said, the more I like learn about the castle and the design behind this castle, the more I appreciate it.
Yeah, my problem with this castle, well, first of all, I love Sleeping Beauty Castle. So the fact that there was a duplicate of it, because there's a duplicate of the Cinderella Castle from Disney World, I was excited that this existed somewhere. I will say Sleeping Beauty Castle is still here. They did not do anything to it. They put everything they built onto it's on the back of it. So if you look, it's still Sleeping Beauty
it's
Castle.
It's there, but it blends in with the rest of it.
But they added stuff. There's a restaurant in here and a bunch of other stuff. With the holidays coming up, you might want to make some yummy Disney treats at home. The gingerbread cream cheese muffin recipe has been posted on the Disney Parks blog. This recipe is a little more complicated than the ones that we've shared previously, but it should still be a lot of fun. These look really good.
They do look good. I don't know. I like gingerbread, but I don't like live for gingerbread, if that makes sense.
Sure.
But something about these, I want to try these. I do want to try making these.
I think the thing I don't like about gingerbread is usually gingerbread is like hard, but it's a muffin, mm-hmm. so it's not going to be hard, but you're going to get that nice spice.
Plus, you've got the cream cheese filling in there to kind of tone down the gingerbread flavor too. I think this will be fantastic. Now, this is a cupcake that you can get in the parks. It is available at Walt Disney World right now. It's available over at Disney's Animal Kingdom at the Isle of Java and Harambe Fruit Market. Once again this year, Disney is airing the Wonderful World of Disney Magical Holiday Celebration, Thanksgiving night at 9, 8 Central on ABC. This year is the 5th anniversary of the broadcast and will feature Derek and Julianne Hough hosting from Disneyland while Trevor Jackson hosts from Walt Disney World. The show will contain fan favorite past performances throughout the years. This is why Main Street was decorated.
I know.
So Derek and Julianne Hough could record this amazing thing for us.
I saw the picture and I'm like, they are on Main Street.
They are.
That is the Emporium back there.
This is why people were peeking through the gates and saw decorations on Main Street.
And
now
they do a dance.
Now we know.
This is why they refurbished the Emporium, probably, because they were going to do something like this. Because they did the outside?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, now I have
or
to
they just
this.
Used it like, hey, we just refurbished this. Let's put you right in front of the Emporium. Very cool.
It's good to see little glimpses of Disneyland every now and again.
It is.
Like, everybody knows it's there, but it's nice to have proof that like stuff is still going on. I don't know.
For sure. I'm excited for this, and I will definitely be watching this special.
This week, the Themed Entertainment Association, or THEA, honored Disney with two Outstanding Achievement Awards for Star Wars, Rise of the Resistance, and Mickey and Minnie's Runaway Railway. Additionally, they gave the Buzz Price THEA Award, recognizing a lifetime of distinguished achievements, to Walt Disney Imagineering President Bob Weiss.
You know, I just thought this was fun timing because we actually had pre-recorded our interview that you're going to hear pretty soon with Liberty. And I just thought this was so cool because we talk about these two amazing, amazing attractions. And I think with what we experienced, the level of immersion, like the level of being immersed into these worlds and how different these worlds are, the technology, well, I shouldn't say worlds, how different these stories are, the technology that the Imagineers use to make this all come alive is just incredible. It's nothing, it's not like any other Disney attraction I have experienced.
Yeah.
So it makes, it makes perfect sense that they were getting awards for these because just fantastic. In fact, right here it's quoted that these two attractions raise the bar for all dark rides to come.
Oh, yeah. Well, so just a quick recap here, just because I didn't know that much about Bob Weiss, but Bob started his career at Walt Disney Imagineering working on Disney's first international theme park, Tokyo Disneyland. He later had senior creative roles in designing Disney MGM Studios, which is now Hollywood Studios, Tokyo's second Disney theme park, Tokyo DisneySea, and the multi-year transformation of Disney California Adventure, including Buena Vista Street and Cars Land. He was the top creative executive for Shanghai Disney Resort before becoming president of Imagineering in 2016. Wow. I mean, what a career.
Yeah, just amazing. And so, I mean, so much creativity, so much innovation, so much just magic in all of the things that he was a part of.
Oh, yeah. So good on him. I'm glad that he got this. Also, we didn't put this in the show, but I think it's important to note. Also this week, Joe Rohde, famed Imagineer who created or helped create all of Animal Kingdom, he is retiring after 40 years in Imagineering, so his last day is January 4th, and I think that's a huge loss to the Walt Disney Company just because there was rumors, and of course with the Imagineering story, there was video of him looking at Tomorrowland, so there was rumors that he was championing a renovation of Tomorrowland for Disneyland, but who knows?
I don't know. I think jury's still out on that because I do think these projects are planned way further in advance than we would even imagine they're being planned. So I think that he probably did have a hand in it. And I think that we'll probably see him back when they do actually make it come back. Sure. It'll be like a consulting role or something. You know, it is sad. You know, we love him. He's amazing. The level of detail that he puts into things is just incredible. Like Tag mentioned, he is probably best known for Animal Kingdom. Also, he had a big hand in the Avatar area there too. Mm-hmm. But he did do some things over in Disneyland. He helped with the transition from the Tower of Terror to Mission Breakout. So, and again, lots of detail in that attraction. And like, think of the queue there too. He's incredible, just incredible. However, we do wish him all the best and think it is a well-deserved retirement. 40 years with the company. He started there when he was 25. So that's incredible. So congrats, Joe Rohde. Thank you for everything that you've given us. And I'm excited to see who the next Imagineer is going to be and who's going to fill these big shoes. Because I feel like we've had a lot of really big, amazing Imagineers recently. And it's been back to back to back. So who's it going to be next?
That's true. That this leaves some room for that. Is this from Mark and Allison?
It is Mark and Allison.
So Mark and Allison are in our chat right now, and they are in downtown Disney, and they're waiting to get to Buena Vista Street. They just got their text to come back. So just how exciting. I'm glad that that they're there and getting to enjoy that, because what is it, Tuesday night?
I think they might be the first weekly tiers that we know of that's visited Buena Vista Street, so that's pretty exciting.
True.
Very exciting. Well, now it's time to take a trip to Trivia Land, where producer James this week will try and stump us with some Disney trivia. He's going to ask us four questions, possibly a bonus. Tag and I are going to do our best to answer them. And of course, we'll get our correct answers after our discussion topic. So what do you have for us this week, James?
I feel like I might be a little too nice to you this week.
Oh,
consider it a feeling of thanks and gratitude.
Oh.
So Question number one. Earlier this year, a petition got several hundred signatures to rename a certain location in Disneyland. Can you tell me which place?
Rename a certain location. Just rename it?
Just rename it. I've got a hint if you're stuck.
Splash Mountain. Oh, no. Rename it.
Rename it.
Not retheme it.
Yeah. I feel like this is really dumb because I feel like I should know this because I'm sure we've reported on
I'm
it.
I'm sure we have too.
A petition.
And this year.
This year. Yep.
What's your hint, James?
Think about the longest serving employee at the park.
Oh, yes. They wanted to rename the Carnation Cafe for... this is really bad. I don't remember his name.
Oscar.
Oscar, yes. They wanted to rename it like Oscar's Place, I think.
Oh, and so did they go for that or did they keep Incarnation?
It was just a petition. They didn't...
But it kind of would be cool because he's been there for so long. Yeah. We saw him, so it was kind of sad. So I read a bunch of stuff about him online and like he has a couple like signature meals there. And I remember getting the potatoes because it was like Oscar's potatoes. Yeah. And since the Riverboat Terrace doesn't have my breakfast potatoes anymore, I thought they would be good. Well, anyway, so we went to Carnation Cafe and he was walking around and like he's a very elderly gentleman, so he was slowly moving around and I was like, oh, it's him, and he was the sweetest old little guy. Unfortunately, I did not enjoy his potatoes as much as the River Voltaire's potatoes. I really miss those potatoes. Anyway, James, you remember that, wasn't that one when you were there with me?
Yes, it was.
Yeah.
All right, question number two from listener Liberty M. Who was the voice of Eagle Sam for America Sings in Disneyland?
For Sam Eagle? Not Sam Eagle. It's not the Muppet.
It is a tribute to America. But...
a tribute to all the nations of the world, but mostly America. I love that line.
I don't know this one. I'm feeling embarrassed. Here, James thought he was giving us all these softballs, and we're like stumped on them.
I'm going to say, who's the guy that has the voice? Who is like
the
Tony
voice
the Tiger and
Disneyland?
Stuff? Why am I thinking? No.
Oh.
Is that Thurl Ravenscroft who did the... Was that him? I keep getting all of them mixed up because we've talked so much about Haunted Mansion.
Well, the chat's saying Burl Ives, so...
That's what the chat is saying.
I'm going to go with the chat.
So, points to Lee and Kate for saying Burl Ives.
I mean, assuming they're correct.
Well, we're going to stick with our community.
We're going with the audience, and the audience is voting Burl Ives.
Okay.
All right, question number three. How many fake snakes are in the Indiana Jones attraction?
How many fake snakes?
Fake snakes.
All of them.
Wait a minute. Wait.
Like a Jungle Cruise joke.
Wait. I think this is a trick question. I think there's just the one big snake.
How many fake snakes are in there?
I think there's one big snake. I don't think there's snake.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think it's just one. I think there's just the one big snake.
Yeah, because he says snakes, or why is it going to be snakes, but there's only the one snake there. Yeah.
Good call. I still like my answer.
Trick
better.
Question.
All of them.
I don't think that counts.
All right, our last question for this week. Pins have been at the park since opening, but pin trading became a thing much later. When?
Wasn't it 99?
I'm trying to think because the pin trading logo has it on there.
I think it was 99. Like, I think it was 99. Or 97, 98.
Crap.
Didn't it just celebrate 20 years?
Late 90s. Gosh, I don't know.
Didn't we just cover...
got into
pin It was trading? The 20th anniversary of the pin trading. Wasn't that what the emerald things were?
Oh, you're right.
So was that 99?
Was it 99 or 2000?
Maybe 2000.
You'll go 99, I'll go 2000.
Okay.
Because your gut was 99, so sure. Stick with your gut.
Some good answers. Did I live up to my grateful attitude of easy questions? Well, you'll just have to wait till after the discussion to find out.
Well, this week we have another special guest on the show with us. We would like to welcome Liberty, who is one of our fabulous supporters and listeners of DL Weekly, but she just got back from her very own Walt Disney World trip. So welcome to the show, Liberty.
Hi, everyone.
I also want to say, because you didn't mention it, but I think that she deserves a ton of credit for this. She is also our chat trivia master. So she is, if we talk about on the podcast all the time that there's all types of cool stuff happening in our chat. Liberty is one of the people who puts in probably some of the most work into the chat to do cool daily trivia. Thank you for doing this. And games.
So much fun. I love that. And I love how we have quite a few people who know their Disney trivia.
Absolutely.
I imagine it gets to like to a certain point that you're like, how do I stump them? Like, just, you know, having to get creative.
Oh, yeah. My favorites have been the villain voices.
Oh, yeah.
Those are fun.
Those are super fun.
Yeah, because I like those because I'm like, oh, And sometimes I know exactly because you've done a couple. And one of them I was like, oh, I know this one right away. And the other one I was like, I have no idea who this is. But if you need hard trivia questions, I'm telling you, some of our listeners, I mean, obviously every week stump us.
Yeah.
But that, but we have such a smart community when it comes to stuff. Mm-hmm. So.
Yeah. It's fun watching you two also get stumped.
Yeah.
Producer Vern or James.
I just wish that we would do better, but that's okay. Well, so to get us started here, so Liberty, what is your Disney story? How did you get involved with Disney? What brought you to the level of Disney fan that you are now and your love of the parks overall?
Yeah. So for me, Disney is, it's a childhood memory. We didn't really frequent the parks as much when I was a kid. I could say, you know, on one hand, we visited about three or four times when I was a child. Mm-hmm. A lot of my memories come from the animated classics. I was a Disney, like, 90s movie kid. A lot of my merch in my room, like my bed sheets, and just my toys were Disney-based, specifically The Little Mermaid. So nice. That Disney magic for me comes from the movies, and the parks were like an added plus. And we would, my very first visit, I believe it was like 4 years old. It was during the holiday season. I got a really good introduction to the theme park and just all of the magic, especially during the holidays. But then as I got older, I would say that I would join, a lot of my other Disney obsessed friends in going to the parks during like the summer. And it became a really fun favorite tradition during the Halloween season. That's when, as a young adult, that's when I started to go during the Halloween season. And my friends and I would enjoy like Halloween time, all the treats, the decorations, dressing up. That was really the time that I kind of would say I had another like Disney awakening. and I kind of fell in love again with all of the Disney magic. But I would say, yeah, it just started out with like the animation classics, Little Mermaid, Cinderella, all those movies in the 90s when they had like a animation like renaissance, I guess.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, that's awesome. Was definitely a great time for Disney animation, that's for sure.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So on your first day at Disneyland, when you enter the parks, which way do you go? Do you tend to go towards Adventureland, maybe straight ahead to Fantasyland, over to Tomorrowland? Do you kind of have a plan of attack for the parks, or how do you do the park?
Well, after we grab some Starbucks and get our caffeine in the morning, and that's usually, if it's Disneyland, then yeah, we're going to grab a cup of coffee, sip the coffee, and then just kind of stand and like take in all of the magic on Main Street. We love to go left and we go into Adventureland, and it's typically Pirates or Haunted Mansion first, because we find that it's early. We're usually rope dropping and it's early in the morning. We're going straight to those, to New Orleans Square. Yeah.
Nice.
Well, and there's like, even if you're not the very, very first person there, they pump through so many people so quickly that you're not waiting hardly at all.
Yeah. It's moving. We know the line's moving, and it's just such a like a magical like thought that is makes me think of Walt and makes me think of just all the historical like nostalgia that comes with the theme park.
So, yeah. I mean, you had me at first stop to get the coffee.
Yep,
but
I knew
I think
that.
This is a good plan of attack, right? You kind of like sit and absorb and just enjoy Main Street for a little bit, and then I feel like a lot of people, going left has become more popular, it seems, because a lot of people are flocking to Indiana Jones now. So the last couple of times I tried to go to Indy first, the line was like back to the Tiki Room already. I'm like, nope.
Oh, wow.
So I did the same thing and just walked through. So you kind of, it's nice because you kind of get to enjoy bits of the park and then get right onto one of those attractions, because there's never a wait that early because they can just get so many people through. And bonus, right? Like, you might get most of a boat to yourself for Pirates.
Oh, that's true.
That's another fun thing.
Yeah, we normally, we usually do, because it's not as crowded at that time. So yeah, that is a huge bonus.
What is your favorite Disney attraction?
And remember, this can be any of the parks. It doesn't have to specifically be Disneyland.
Oh, yeah.
Let's see. That is tough. Probably, you know, even I just tougher. Came back from Walt Disney World. I know. It is tough because I've been exposed now to so many cool things. I will say my all-time favorite would have to be the Radiator Springs Racers in Cars Land. I think that it was around that time I was like falling in love with Disney again as a young adult, that I rode that ride with a friend at sunset. It was just like such a cool moment to be on that ride at that time in like the golden hour. And I think for me, that just solidified like, wow, this is my real happy place right now. And it feels really good to be here with friends and people I love. So I think because it brings back that memory, it's just always going to be one of my favorites.
Can we just spend a moment appreciating Cars Land? That land is amazing.
Oh, yeah.
Absolutely, absolutely amazing. And honestly, Radiator Springs is one of the, like, in my opinion, one of the most perfect attractions, because it's this, like, indie. It's a really nice blend of a thrill ride plus, like, the classic story and, like, storyline of, like, a dark ride. So
that intro,
great.
That beginning where you come through that little bit and the music does it and the waterfalls there. I love it. It gives me chills every time.
Absolutely.
Beautiful.
Yeah.
So, Liberty, we're having you on this week because you just got back from Disney World. So let's start with the most basic, which is, why did you decide as a huge Disneyland fan to go to Disney World?
Well, I would say I took advantage of this opportunity because I had a ton of time off, like, available from work. I also wanted to combine it with a trip with my mom. We had planned to do something for her birthday, and she and I always wanted to do Walt Disney World. She's a big theme park lover as well, big Disney fan. Awesome. And I actually was inspired by a trip that you two took. And so I think I was always kind of teetering, you know, I was always hesitant just given where we're at right now. But I think I felt like I had seen so many reviews and I had heard how your experience went. I felt really confident and safe and comfortable and prepared for like a week long trip. And so I feel like I haven't had, you know, a vacation for a while now. And then also this is a great way to just be able to leave and kind of de-stress from everything that has been going on.
Yeah.
And I also felt really confident in Concierge, which was the travel agency that we worked with, because they were so supportive and they helped set everything up. In addition to just being a huge Disney fan and a huge Disney parks fan, you know, I felt like this was like probably the right time. It's, you know, better now.
Yeah. You hear that, Disney? We're sending people your way. So maybe if you get us into the parks more. No.
Well, you know, and it was such a unique time to be in a Disney theme park with all of, you know, with all of the safety things in place. I mean, obviously the big thing that everyone talks about is, you know, what is it like wearing a mask in Florida in the terrible humidity? And it's not fun, but you get used to it. But the thing that was just so amazing and interesting and kind of in some weird way a little extra magical was being able to experience a park with like 25% capacity and experiencing attractions in basically your own ride vehicle. It was just such a unique, you kind of almost at times
felt like a VIP experience.
Yeah, you kind of felt like you were there by yourself doing things. So that was a really, really cool and really surreal way to experience, especially Disney World.
Well, now I've got another question though, Liberty. So you went a while out, because we went in August, the end of August. You went the beginning of November? Yeah.
Second week
of
November.
What were the crowds like when you were there? Because I know that Disney said that they're up to 35% capacity now. So how did that feel? Because I'm sure that it was a little bit busier when you were there compared to when we were there.
Yeah, I think they had just shifted to that 35% while I was there, actually. I think so. Experiencing that percentage, that crowd level was interesting because I did feel like we had that VIP ride experience, and we were just on the move constantly. Like, you're moving in these really long lines. They're long, and they go out and they kind of bleed out into the, you know, the pedestrian walkways, but they're moving. There were times, I will say, we were a bit uncomfortable, especially I was thinking about my mom. You know, she's older and she's in kind of like that high risk bracket. And so we would just kind of remove ourselves from crowds, and we would kind of take some time and walk through a store or something and, you know, kind of go to an isolated area and take some time, take a break. But I think to experience, to your point, Teresa, I think another reason why we went during the fall, the early fall, was because we wanted to make sure that it was okay to be in our mask 100% of the time in those weather conditions, and know that like it wasn't going to be too hot, and we could manage. I'm currently, you know, I'm based in the Bay Area. It's not too warm, but my mom, she's based in Sacramento, and having her wear a mask in that heat at the time was, she couldn't really manage that all day and outside in like
plus
a theme
humidity.
Park. Yeah. So then you add humidity to that. We were like really intentional about going in November because of those very reasons. But I will say, I mean, once we get to talk about specific parks, I felt probably the least comfortable and safe at Hollywood Studios, specifically.
That matched up with about our experience too.
Yeah, specifically like the Star Wars Galaxy's Edge, because it's such a small area and it's really hard to just like spread people out and crowds out in that area. That one, we left a little bit early that day.
Which is funny because it's a 14-acre new land, our biggest new land. And then it's like, it's very hard to get around.
It's because the attractions are ginormous.
Yeah.
Yeah. I actually thought that was smaller. Like, it felt smaller than the Galaxy, than the Batuu West. You know,
see, I thought so, too.
I thought so, too. Because it feels to me like the transition from Disneyland to Batuu in Disneyland is much longer. Like, I feel like there's a longer pathway before you're like fully immersed in the land.
Sure.
Whereas Walt Disney World at Hollywood Studios, it kind of felt like you like crossed over, you walk five steps and like boom, there, you know, there it was. So it didn't feel like, I don't know, it didn't feel as secluded like Disneyland's does.
Yeah, I agree.
I don't know. I felt like when we went to Disneyland, it felt more immersive, like you said. It felt larger, like you said, Liberty. And it just had a different feel to it. It also felt like it didn't have as much shrubbery and stuff around, like as much like trees and stuff, even though Disneyland I don't think had that much either. I just remember because it was so dang hot when we were there and so
warm,
sunny that I just wanted some shade. And maybe the difference with that is because that in California it wasn't as hot,
that could be.
So maybe it felt like there was more shade. I don't know. They say it's identical, but challenging to think that sometimes.
So before we get ourselves distracted and get like fully immersed into one of the parks, let's take a step back. So what did you do on your first day?
So my first day, our first park day was Magic Kingdom.
Fun.
And we had received advice from, like, I'd received advice from different friends and other park goers that, you know, it's best to like start your trip off with the parks that will require the most energy. And we thought that Magic Kingdom and Hollywood Studios, those would be the two parks that would require most of our energy because there's a lot to see in both.
Mm-hmm. I can get behind that.
Yeah. So Magic Kingdom was our first. And the first thing we rode was, it was like the classic. We rode Small World and Peter Pan's Flight. And
so what did you think of those compared to Disneyland?
Yeah, that was such a great start to the day. I thought Peter Pan's Flight was a walk-on, by the way. We got on in second.
Nice.
And
nice.
I thought that the music and just like the overall layout of the ride was actually a better experience than Disneyland. I felt like Disneyland was really super excited, Teresa. Disneyland was it's classic, it's iconic, but the music is not as charming, I thought, as the
sure.
Disney World version.
What did you think of
and
that
also
queue?
The layout. Oh, the queue was beautiful.
That queue is amazing. I give you that one.
It is.
Liberty
yeah.
has joined the dark side.
That's okay.
And we're preferring...
You know, differences
know.
Are what
something...
makes everybody cool.
Well,
everybody has different
what?
Opinions.
I was actually very, like, relieved, like, that they are different, that it's not exactly sure. the same. I think that makes it more yeah. interesting, right?
Well, let's bring it around. How about It's a Small World?
Oh, by far, like hands down, Disneyland wins this one.
Yeah.
Bam.
It's so there are quite a few things. My mom and I, we were like critiquing the entire time while we were on the ride. First of all, we had our own boat and we just felt that it was very bland. We didn't get the same look and feel that mm-hmm. we got, you know, we get from the Disneyland ride. And then we're also thinking of how beautiful Small World Holiday looks at this mm-hmm. time, you know?
Yeah.
And we were, that was like our point of reference. And we're thinking, wow, this could use some work. And there was a lot of negative, like empty space.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
So we were just looking for things and a little disappointed and sad when we saw like empty walls.
I think you put the nail right on the head because it's just bland. Like I felt like ours in Disneyland feels warmer and there's more things going on and more colorful. Yeah. And then you go to the one in Disney World, it just seems like, well, we need to recreate this. Let's throw some dolls in here and we'll make it better by flooding everything, which you
like. I do like that they flood everything. Yes. That's the only thing that I liked better about it was...
I just don't know why they don't do better with their exteriors. Like they could have built a giant thing like they do in Disneyland and you could have had the queue beyond that. Peter Pan's the same way because they still kept that like castle fair medieval. Kind of medieval look, and I just don't like that as much.
The other thing with Small World too that I don't know, it just dawned on me, did it feel like the scenes were further away from the boats in Walt Disney World than they are in Disneyland? I feel like Disneyland, like you're very immersed. It's like you almost feel like you could reach out and touch the dolls at some points. But like Walt Disney World, they felt much further away.
I felt the same way. I felt like they were pretty far removed. And I don't know if that had to do with just the overall size and scope that they built out the Small World attraction. But I did feel like it was far off and didn't include as much detail. I think the detail was what my mom and I were looking for. We love that about the ride and Disneyland. Yeah. Detail was just lacking over at the Disney World version.
So what did you do next?
Okay, so after Small World, we walked around and just kind of wanted to definitely take in all of the sights and sounds because as first timers, we just wanted to experience and compare from what we knew about Disneyland. And then from there, we... just looked at, you know, we would often like look at the app and see what were the wait times for the other attractions. Mm-hmm. I believe it was Haunted Mansion. That was the next ride.
Good choice.
Yeah.
Well, it is right there.
It was, we walked on to that as well. And I don't know if you felt this way, but it was really dark. Just like almost to the point I couldn't really see, even in the card room. I mean, I couldn't really see anything. Like, typically, Disneyland's ballroom, the Haunted Mansion ballroom, is bright and you can see so much, obviously, during the holidays. But this one was significantly dark.
That's how I felt because there that whole section where you go like through the library and then you're in that stair room, which is those two things are not in Disneyland's version. Yeah. They seemed very dark. And the hallway, too, because we got stuck in that hallway.
We did get stuck in that hallway for quite a while.
What did you think about the fact that you could just walk through the stretching room because of COVID?
Oh, right. I felt like that was cool. We got, because it was so early and there weren't very many people lined up yet, I took my time walking through and just kind of taking a look at what, you know, the walls and stuff and the ceiling. I thought that was really cool. What was great, there were like cast members who were kind of placed in every kind of section of the line, like reminding them, you know, reminding guests to keep masks on and to keep them on the ride. So I thought that was cool too, just kind of directing. A lot of guests, like including myself, needed a lot of like direction because sometimes even though the queue or like the line was had signage, it was still kind of confusing where folks could go because they had roped off certain parts and not others. So it was helpful to see that because that was the first time we had to like walk quite a bit to get
in. What got confusing to me on some of the attractions is where they had switchback areas and the line seemed like the little 6-foot line was missing, but it dawned on me after a couple of those that they're trying to stagger the switchback. So I remember seeing this a lot in Animal Kingdom for the Navi River journey, because you there'd be a line, and then it'd be like 12 feet away would be the next line, but the next row over would have their stop line in between that, so you would never be stopping next to someone, as opposed to also not being just that close. And I remember finding that difficult. And it, we were just talking about Peter Pan. Peter Pan was difficult because sometimes those lines were like around a corner. And so you'd have to like peek and be like, are they, have they moved?
Yep. That dawned on us later too. It took us a couple times to practice like just this, this like protocol. Because your natural feeling, like my natural feeling was to continue to move up. If I see in my periphery crowds are moving, then I'm going to move forward naturally. But I think for me, eventually, like probably like the second park day, after doing that so many times throughout the day, you realize you're really, you're controlling the movement, because you just have to physically stop at those markers. So the crowd behind you will keep moving, I noticed, until I stop.
Well, because, I mean, how many years has Disney been like, move all the way in, don't leave any extra seats? You know, come on, people, move up. Because I was that person when I go to the parks and we're in a queue and somebody, even though it's stupid, right? Even though, like, okay, they're going to move up three more feet.
Yeah, you're not.
And we're just going to stop again. I'd just be like, come on, there's room. Let's go.
Like, I want to get on the ride. Like, I want to be that group that gets on eventually.
What is your, by the way, what does your sweatshirt say? All I see is please return to Disneyland.
This is, it says please return. It's an Ink and Paint Co. small shop.
I like how it's, I just imagine you being like lost by your, or out by yourself and somebody's like, oh, we need to take you to Disneyland.
That is the goal. I mean,
I mean, we want to try to get through the rest of your Magic Kingdom day, because how many days total were you in Disney World?
5 days.
And so did you do any park twice?
I did. What and did we- you'll probably think I'm crazy, or viewers might hear this and think I'm crazy, but I had a bit of a situation with Hollywood Studios. So there are two opportunities to get a Rise of the Resistance boarding pass. And that's the new, the new strategy is 7 a.m. You don't have to be in the park. You could be in your hotel. You could be out of property or whatever. You just have to be on the app at 7 a.m. The second opportunity is 2 p.m. in the afternoon, when once you're checked in to the park, and your party's in the park. And the first day we went to Hollywood Studios, I had very bad luck. I didn't get a boarding pass at 7 a.m. I didn't get one at 2 p.m.
Oh, no.
So I decided to shift some plans. And with the help of James over at Concierge, we made it work. I bought an additional park pass for myself because at the time, so my mom is not a huge Star Wars fan. She was okay. She's like, I'm going to go to Disney Springs and I'm going to go shopping. I'm like, okay, fine. On the day that we were, we had planned to go to Animal Kingdom, I decided to go to Hollywood Studios again, and we shifted Animal Kingdom plans to the last day. And we did that originally because we had heard the storm coming in, and that that day for Animal Kingdom was potentially going to be one of the worst storm days. And we felt like, you know, Animal Kingdom, everything outdoors, the safari, we wouldn't be able to see much anyways. We heard animals aren't out during the rain and all of that. So we thought, okay, let's shift that to Saturday. That leaves us with a rest day, a Disney Springs day, or just a resort day. And I thought, okay, I have an opportunity. I don't know when I'm going to be back in Florida. I don't know when I'm, when Disneyland is opening. So I decided to tackle Hollywood Studios again and try to get a boarding pass. And the second, that second day, that second park day, I got it. So I did the 7 a.m. boarding group opportunity, and I was, I think, boarding group 57 or something. And I also got a chance to ride some of the rides at Hollywood Studios that I didn't get to ride the first day that I was there.
So it worked out well then.
What didn't you get to ride the first day?
Rock and Roller Coaster. And
is this because your mom didn't want to, or the lines were too long, or?
Both. By the time we had decided that we could go after, I think it was lunch or something, my mom, I had read about that ride, and she's not a fan of the indoor roller coaster.
Yeah.
Oh, sure.
And just like the speed at which that one goes. But for some reason, she could do Space Mountain, which is really odd. And she loves Space Mountain. But yeah, I rode Rock and Roller Coaster. And then I also missed the Muppets 3D show the first time. So then the second time I got to see that. And Star Tours. I didn't get to do Star Tours the first time. So
had you experienced Rise of the Resistance before? Or was this your first time?
This was my first time.
So we don't want to ruin the magic for anyone, but what did you think? What did you think of the queue?
Well, wait,
what did you think
I have
of?
A preface question first. When you went through, did you seem like you flowed through the attraction well? Because my problem when we were there was we kept getting like held up at different points, and that kind of ruined the experience for me. Did you have a more fluid experience?
I had a more fluid experience. Okay. And I remember you both talking about that and thinking, okay, I'm going to just mentally prepare to be stopped along the way, but I wasn't. It was smooth. We got called and they scanned my magic band. And I don't know if this happened to you, but they scanned it twice right before we got in. We were like 3/4 of the way in right before you get past a certain hot spot into the ride itself, into the immersive experience. And I got scanned in again just as like a double check that this is you.
I think we did.
Yeah, that sounds right. So what did you think?
I loved it. I mean, I think so. That was the first time I knew I was going to cry on this trip. I knew I was going to get teary eyed just like being, you know, seeing the Christmas trees at the kingdom or seeing the castle lit up during the projections. But I didn't realize how emotional I would get like on a ride. And I got so emotional. I got goosebumps. I was probably teary eyed the entire time. I felt like I was in a movie. Like I felt like I was in a full on Star Wars scene. Not giving too much away, but that's how I felt. Yeah.
Super immersive then. That's awesome.
Yeah.
I just want to go experience it again and not have slowdowns because I feel like that's what took it out for me. But I think the attraction itself is great. But I missed the immersive story part of it, I guess.
Yeah.
But every individual piece I thought was amazing. Mm-hmm. I just wanted it to be.
Yeah.
I wanted the pacing to be what they intended the pacing to be. So
see, that just gives us something to look forward to for the next time we experience it. That's all.
Well, the other thing too, and I don't mean to poo-poo the attraction, so nobody write us angry emails or anything, but I feel like I'm going to go in with such low expectations next time that I'll definitely like it.
Well, and I think your other problem, which you would confess to me after we got off of it, because I went in
because I watched videos.
I had gone in spoiler-free. He had watched a bunch of videos. So he's like, you know, I think you did it right. I think I was I knew where to look on certain things. So it was just a much different experience.
Yeah, I think not seeing anything, you're obviously going to be more surprised. Mm-hmm. I don't like waiting. I'm very impatient. So, of course, I was going to watch videos. I did feel, but like I said, I think I would have enjoyed it because the videos I saw all had good pacing. So I was very excited to have that adrenaline the whole time. And I felt like every time I started getting pumped up, it would be at a pause point. And then I'm like, and then it would just, you know, and then I was like, well, how long are we going to sit here? You know, I don't know.
Well, and I think the other problem, too, is because we kept getting stopped. You're probably like, but I want to really see this scene or that scene. Or like, I'm so excited. I'm so close to seeing the scene.
I wanted to stay in that section between where you see the hologram and when you get on the ship to leave Batu. I wanted to be in that space for a little bit longer than we were. That was very quick.
Oh, you felt rest in that? I felt like I was there for
a
while.
I didn't feel rest at all.
So, because where Poe's X-Wing was. Because I felt like we got out there.
Oh, that part.
Yeah.
The outside part.
Yeah, because we got out there and we got on our little dot and I started to look around to like, be immersed in it, and then the door opened and they're like, go here, you go there. I'm like,
we were the first, like, we were the first group, so we were like right at the doors of the shuttle.
So I was like a green or no, I was a blue circle, and the blue circles were in the back, and so I was the last person to get on.
So you got to hang out,
so you were exact opposite of where we were.
Got it.
So the other big attraction in Hollywood Studios is Mickey and Minnie's Runaway Railway. Were you able to experience that one?
Yes. We rode that twice.
Nice. So what did you think?
Yes. Wow. I love to give a scene by scene synopsis. This is another one of those rides where you do not blink. at all, because you will miss out all of just the amazing atmosphere, and just like all the scenes. The screens are amazing. I mean, there are huge screens on in this ride, of course, but there are also really cool effects, like physical, you know, effects, 3D effects. So I think that was really fun. It was just such a joyful, pleasant ride. It was very exciting, a lot of energy. We didn't get to watch the cartoon because I think they had changed that. They paused that, the cartoon watching.
You could actually watch, right?
Yeah, you could actually watch that short in another theater, like adjacent to the ride, and then just go get in line to ride Mickey and Minnie's Runaway. But we still got, like, I had watched the video, of course, beforehand. And so the pre-show was, not having the pre-show was fine. Yeah. I didn't notice this until you actually mentioned it, Teresa, that the two different scenes. That was really cool. So I went back into some of my like video footage and I like caught that. I thought that was awesome too.
Yeah.
The 360 view is awesome. I mean, you just are, it starts with this really charming story. And I feel like it's such a great family friendly fun ride. And also it brings back, this is like the, you know, the nostalgia, the Mickey nostalgia, like it brings it back to the original characters. And it's just so fun to see them in this new, like technologically advanced ride. So that's what makes it really fun and warm too. Yeah.
It's a good, for Mickey's first attraction, I think it was a good,
I think so.
Good foray. And I am very excited that it's coming to Disneyland. And I know, Teresa, you don't like it when they duplicate attractions, but this one, I'm glad that they're duplicating.
I'm okay with this one being duplicated.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that song at the end, like right now, it's in my head.
Yeah.
It's a very catchy song.
When you get to the end and you just see, you know, you get to the end of the story essentially, and you're like, you just want more. So I'm glad we got a chance to write it a second time. And we had some time in between. To experience it again, because that second time it was like brand new still, because there was so much to look at and experience. And I actually, it's so cool that, like, even now as I'm thinking about it, I didn't know that you don't tilt at or you don't really actually experience all the things that you feel or you think you're experiencing on the ride. So they did their job really well.
Yes, they did. Those Imagineers are amazing.
And some of those things that they do, some of those effects are very like flashy, like, wow, that was cool. But then when you think about how simple those effects are actually, but they executed them so well. It's like the Haunted Mansion, right? A lot of the effects that we love about the Haunted Mansion are very simple, but they're executed perfectly. And I think that's what this is too. So your mom went with you, like you've been saying.
Yeah.
Has she ever been to Disney World before?
I don't think so. She did mention that years ago she may have visited MGM Studios, so Hollywood Studios,
when
it was called MGM. She had gone out for like a work trip and it was like a super brief visit, but she didn't remember anything. So this was, it was essentially like her first trip. Yeah.
Nice.
So what did she think of Disney World overall?
She loved it. Her favorite was Mickey and Minnie's Runaway Railway.
That is,
it's hard, isn't it?
The worst name. It's such a tongue twister.
Yeah. I've gotten good at it. When we were starting to report it, I was like, oh no. Oh no. Because remember, we were both tongue-tied over it. But now... Yeah.
My other problem, too, is I start to say, like, Minnie Mouse, the main attraction.
Minnie the main attraction. Yeah.
Minnie the main attraction. Yeah. No, it's like, nope. Attraction. Mickey and Minnie's Runaway Railway. Wrong thing.
She thought that the ride was really like the Runaway Railway. She thought it was long. And I told her, like, actually, Mom, it was only like, it was under 5 minutes. It was like 4.5 or something.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
Because I confirmed with a cast member afterwards. I'm like, how long was that ride? And that's what he said. Yeah, it's like under 5. Wow. So it doesn't feel like that at all.
Holy cow. No, it doesn't.
Yeah, it's a cool attraction. So, quick fire here. I'm gonna quick fire you. All right. So, Hollywood Studios. What was your favorite attraction?
Rise of the Resistance.
Least favorite attraction.
Rock and Roller Coaster.
Okay.
Really?
Now, Magic Kingdom, since we already talked about it. Favorite attraction?
Seven Dwarfs Mine Train.
That's a good one, isn't it? Least favorite attraction.
Oh, I'm gonna get some haters for this. Space Mountain.
Really? Yeah, because it's a different experience, isn't it?
It is. It's very different. It's not as smooth as Disneyland. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. in my opinion.
No, I don't. They haven't had their track rebuilt recently like Disneyland's did.
Yeah.
Or so relatively.
I felt all of those kind of weird, like, yeah, I felt it. And that also being one of the first rides in the morning just didn't do so well with me.
Oh, sure. Yeah, sure.
Yeah.
Did you get a chance to experience the Carousel of Progress?
Yes, I did.
So what did you think of that?
That was a great break from the humidity.
Yeah.
So I will say I do appreciate the Walt Disney World having a lot of indoor attractions and performances because of the weather.
They have to.
Yeah, I know, right? So it was a great break. And it was very logical. Like I anticipated the next scene and like the details in the next scene. So that was cool. I never seen a video, never seen a POV of this ride. So I was actually really surprised and I enjoyed it. My mom liked it too. Yeah.
It's a really great attraction. I think that if they did like a really good refurbishment of it and updated like the last little section or added something, I think that it would get a whole new life to it. Cause I think I just, the story and the flow was really nice. I love the narrator. I just love his voice.
Yeah.
And I think it's interesting because it puts a lot of cool things in perspective. Like every time people are alive, they think it's the best it's ever been and like how great everything is. But then you notice as time goes on, how interesting, because like right now we think, I mean, we've had quite a technological advancement, right, in the last 20 years.
Yeah.
But just imagine what it's going to be like a generation from now and a generation after that, you know, like it's crazy.
Yeah.
I don't know. I'm just like, I love living right now because I like technology and all this stuff. But then I'm like, man, wouldn't I love to live like 60 years from now when it's like so much better? I don't know.
It could be better.
But that's life. Yeah. That's always going to be the case. You know, it's like, when are we ever going to like go backwards? Mm-hmm. You know?
Yeah.
Almost an impossibility unless some terrible thing comes along.
My favorite was the dog.
Yeah.
The dog is cool too. And that was at Disneyland previously. That got moved over there. So that was originally, all of that was originally in Disneyland.
Which is like crazy to think about because it seems like it's massive.
Right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
Which is now like, what is it?
Star Wars Launch Bay.
Yes, I'm like the Star Wars something or other now.
Yep. Moving on from these two parks right now, which one do you want to talk about next, Epcot or Animal Kingdom?
Let's talk about Animal Kingdom.
Okay. So right off the bat, favorite attraction?
Flight of Passage.
Least favorite attraction?
The least favorite.
Did you go on Cali River Rapids?
No, that line was way too long.
You didn't miss anything because Teresa and I went on it and we didn't get wet.
No.
And there was only like one sort of drop and it was very short.
It was not. I liked the theming of it. I thought the theming was interesting, but it just wasn't as exciting as like Grizzly River Run.
Yeah.
But we
got off of it and I was like, that wasn't very good.
Well, you know, like I watched videos and it looks like you do. I was looking forward to that one because of how warm it had been that day. But yeah, we just could not wait in that line.
So we were looking forward to it, too, because we thought we were going to get some, you know, splashed and get a little, you know, refreshed. But I don't know if it's the attraction or if it was the fact that because of social distancing, they don't have the ride vehicles full. So maybe there wasn't enough weight. So we were sitting a little too high to get splashed. I'm not sure. We'll have to ride it again.
When things are back to
normal. We have full boats again and see if there's any difference. Same thing with Splash Mountain though.
Yeah.
I will say it wasn't like a ride per se. It was like a show. I think it's called like It's Tough to Be a Bug.
Oh, yes.
At Discovery Island. Yeah, that one, it wasn't my favorite.
Yeah.
Also, because at the time, I just felt like they didn't really manage the capacity well with that one because you're so squished up. And I felt like if you're going to regulate, you know, the capacity and do a really good job at that, like this is the one that you should do it in. Yeah. And it just wasn't at the time. So
the worst thing for us. Because that used to also be in California Adventure, and so the thing that ruined it for me was we had masks on and my stupid 3D glasses kept fogging up and I couldn't see anything.
Yeah.
So I kept like wiping them, but it didn't matter. And then finally, when it was starting to get good, the show was over.
Yeah, at that point, your experience was kind of tarnished a little bit.
I do really like the Hopper animatronic
yes.
in that attraction. So I yes. think I actually took my that glasses cool. off so I could make sure I could have a good view of Hopper. We were yeah. a little further back.
That's true.
I was a little sad. I wish I could have sat like right next to where he comes up, but
we were in like one of the back rows.
Yeah, that animatronic's impressive.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So tell us about Animal Kingdom.
Yeah, I think my favorite thing to do was just walk throughout the park. After we had, like, we've done our time in Pandora and just mm-hmm. really soaked up everything there and ate at Sudbury Canteen.
Oh, wasn't that good?
Oh, yes, it was so good. I got the, noodles with garlic shrimp or something.
Mm.
Yeah, I think I posted a picture on the Instagram. But, yeah, it was so good. And I went to Pongu Pongu, got the, what was it? Like the banana wrap or something, or it was like a lumpia.
That was
good. I think the hard part was because there was so much walking in this park. We couldn't like, obviously, sip our drinks and eat while walking and like kind of take in and go see some of the animals and in their habitat. We couldn't do that. So we did have to sit down for a while in different areas and just kind of do that so we can eat and drink.
Mm-hmm.
But for this one, it was more about just taking in the scenes and the music. And I loved Asia. I loved Africa. Then second favorite after Flight of Passage, obviously, would be Expedition Everest.
Yeah.
Flight of Passage is amazing.
It is. It's amazing. And I think I told you earlier on another call that they didn't have the Avatar in the tube or
in the tank.
In the tank. Yeah, they didn't have it in the tank that time. But it was once we got through, I felt like because it was so art, the exterior was so beautiful, like I didn't mind being in line for that long.
Yeah, the queues for both of the attractions in Pandora were pretty amazing. So for people who, I think we described this before, but let's get your opinion on it. So if you were to describe Navi or Flight of Passage to someone, how would you describe the like mechanism, I guess, of it?
For me, I think it feels a lot like an upgraded Soarin' experience where you have, as a writer, like you have control, even though you don't really, but like
you have
a little bit more control of your, was it Banshee?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And I think that's what makes it feel just amazing and just really like advanced because you're pretty much, I mean, you're locked in and it's just like the whole mechanics of like the ride is just, it's just amazing. You're able to feel just on the ride itself, the vibrations and just the turns and the twists and the plunging into things, like you feel that on the ride and it's not just one screen. I mean, you're not just focused on the screen, but you're also attentive to like the movement coming mm-hmm. in from the vehicle itself,
mm-hmm.
which
the
is
fact
what
that
makes
it
you, yeah.
feels like it's breathing is just amazing.
Yes. That's why it feels, I think it's an upgraded like Soarin' experience because yes, you have that screen and there are times when like I accidentally would look up and I would see like feet dangling or something or like I would, you know, I would look to my mom because I'd want to see her expression and we both were like, this is amazing. but then I would get back into the scene and mm-hmm. it was great. Like I the same, similar feeling and emotions with Rise of the Resistance. I felt like I was like an interactive player in this like sequence and it was really fun.
It's definitely worth the hype that everybody had given it.
The thing that's incredible about it is how thrilling that ride mm-hmm. feels, because you're not on a roller coaster by any stretch of the imagination. But so with this attraction, it's interesting because what you're seeing on the screen versus how your Banshee or your ride vehicle is moving, it feels like you're like diving at some points and like just going all of the extremes, and they have air that's blowing at you that really like really sells the fact that you're diving or whatever. Yep. And it was just
Well, and
just
it tilts
incredible.
And stuff, too. So, like, you're getting a lot of that.
Yeah, but not nearly like what you feel. You know, it's not like what you feel you're doing. It's
Again, Imagineers,
incredible.
Man, they're doing a great job.
Yeah. I don't know about you two, but if how far off or how far away you watched Avatar the movie.
Oh.
I'm assuming mm-hmm. both of you have watched it. But it's been like, you know, years since I've watched it, but I felt like the ride brought me back to how exciting just the scenes were. I've just watching it in theater. And so I think that's what my mouth was like open the whole time, just like in awe of everything. And so I felt like, wow, James Cameron did this amazing job. This movie is awesome. I'm watched it again and again. And it just brought the ride itself brought me back to how much I enjoyed the movie. And I just, you know, I watched it like, I think in the hotel room that night.
Nice.
Yeah.
Nice.
Just they're like scenes from it.
Yeah.
One thing I think it would be fun to be a cast member for that attraction. I think it'd be really cool to like stand back where like your backpacks are. Or stand on the side of the apparatus, because I like I would really love to watch how everything like moves.
Well, and how big that building is, because the other thing I did is I looked over and you could see the rows of people.
Yeah.
And if you look down, you're really high up and you don't realize when you're going through the queue that you're going up quite as much. You do afterwards because you go down all those stairs and then you walk for what feels like ever to get out of that building.
It does feel like forever.
And then
like,
people keep coming out of places and you're like, where are you coming from?
Yes. It felt like a military facility. Like, yes, I don't know.
Did.
It had that feel to it.
That was the only time in Animal Kingdom that I felt the social distancing was bad, because everybody came out and you exit into like one staircase.
Yeah.
And so every level kept coming, like you'd go down and then there was that level. And so everybody's trying to cram in.
Well, the other problem too is I don't know why, but everybody was trying to use the exact same hand sanitizer station. So we're having that issue.
They need to work on the timer.
How was it being in a holding chamber when you went? Like, what did it feel crowded in the holding chamber?
No,
before?
No. Because you're talking about like that room where it's like mirrored, like right before you go into. Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
So both times it was like us and like one other group of like three, maybe four people. It wasn't very many people at all.
When we were there, there were not many groups. It was a lot of like pairs.
Yeah.
So there was a lot of like single riders, I noticed, and a lot of pairs, lots of adults, not very many children.
Well, like our entire row, we were at one end and like another group was at the other end.
Yeah.
So there was like four or five chairs between us. So quite a bit of difference.
So moving on to Epcot.
Wait a second. We got to talk about the signature, one of the signature attractions there real quick. What did you think of the Kilimanjaro Safaris?
Oh, we love that one. That was another ride where we could just chill for a bit.
Mm-hmm.
And we had a vehicle to ourselves.
Oh, wow.
And I think it was just the epic time, because the time we went, that was one of the first two that we beeline to. And all of the animals were out. It was
nice.
It was gorgeous. Yeah. And
we really want to go in the morning for that. Yep.
Yeah, because we were scared because of the storm or because of the intermittent rain that, you know, we wouldn't see them. But they were out and we had a really good driver. My mom had like just a ton of questions and I was just like, Mom, relax and just enjoy. But yeah, it was one of my favorites.
Did you watch any of the Animal Kingdom show before you went that was on Disney Plus?
Yes, I did. I did. So I watched it. We watched it like while we were in the hotel getting ready for some of the days. And I think I finished the series while we were out there.
Oh, that's fun.
Did you, when you went on the thing, did you look for the fake tree that they installed in like the first or second episode? That's what I want to go look for now.
I did. I tried to, but I couldn't find it.
It's really good, isn't it?
Yeah, it's really good. Yeah, I couldn't find it. The one thing that I wish we would have gone on at Animal Kingdom was the Rafiki's
Planet Watch.
Planet Watch. Yeah, we didn't do that.
That's really cool, because back there, that's where they have in that show where they do all the vet work and there's the windows. That's where all that is.
Yeah,
and
you get to kind of peek into that.
That's where Teresa started her.
That was where I started my Wilderness Explorer journey.
Oh, awesome.
Yep.
That's where she picked up her first one. And that was our goal for the rest of the day.
Yep, that became the new plan for the day, was to get all the badges.
Yeah. I wanted to do that, but I saw there was quite a crowd lined up at different tables where cast members were checking in with different kids. And I felt bad because I didn't want to obviously take it over. You know, I wanted the kids to do it first. But also Animal Kingdom was the second most crowded park, I think, in our trip.
Oh, you were there on Saturday, though, right?
Yeah. We were there on Saturday for the weekend. What was
that? I think we were there on a Monday. So.
Yeah, we were there Monday. It was, like, not crowded at all. Mm-hmm. In fact, I was like, this is great. The whole week's going to be like this. And then our second day was Epcot, and it was very similar. Mm-hmm. And then our third day was Hollywood Studios, and we're like, whoa.
Like, what happened?
Something changed.
See, here's what I would do. If I could do it again in terms of order, I would do Magic Kingdom, Animal, Epcot, and then end with Hollywood. Because I already know, like, the two rides that I definitely want to go, you know, get on at Hollywood. And then everything else, you just, I'm okay with, you know, passing. But there are some, like, definitely the rides that sort of, like, the highlights at Magic Kingdom and Animal. Like, I feel like those need to be tackled earlier in the day. And it's just harder to do it later because it gets crowded. But also, sure. I'd rather do Animal Kingdom on a weekday.
Yeah.
Next time.
So moving on, finishing up the rounds here with Epcot. What did you think of Epcot? So different from Disneyland and California Adventure, what we're used to there.
Yes. So nothing like I've experienced before. Mm-hmm. You know, I saw as a kid, I grew up watching all of the promo videos, seeing that. I thought, what is that big golf ball? Like, what
right?
is it? And it's, and so then we finally get there and it's just, it's amazing. Obviously, there's a lot of construction going on. So there are all of these walls and, you know, barriers. And mm-hmm. Like there's a lot of like redirectional signage. It's fine. I think my favorite was the World Showcase. I skipped the Mission Space. Mm-hmm. And I was told, like everyone told me, just go on the kiddie version. I didn't know what that meant at the time, but just the version that wasn't as intense.
Yeah.
And I just thought, well, I'm going to be eating my way around the showcase. I probably will just skip it all together. So thankfully, the Food and Wine Festival was still going on. And it was like, I heard that was like stressed for a long time. So I felt really lucky to still be there or for that to still be there while I was out there. And I think my coming into that park, I just wanted to do Frozen like at least twice. And so that was like my goal in terms of like attractions.
Mm-hmm.
And then also Living with the Land. That was also another like bucket list item, like to do that.
That's a long attraction, but it is actually really great. Cool.
It is. That's why I loved it, because it was so informative. And I really like the narration was great too. And I kept, at one point we were trying to just find all of the hidden Mickeys.
Oh, yes.
On the attraction. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because I remember when James and I went there in 2016, we finished eating and we're like, there's an attraction right here. There's no line. Let's just go get in it. And then we were like, this is kind of cool. Yeah. Like they have all the horticulture stuff, like where they grow a lot of their food and stuff. And then
the greenhouses. At the end.
But there was also some like dark ride ish aspects of things in there, and it goes on and on and on, and it's like, where does all of this fit?
I thought the same way, and I thought the ride was almost over after you get to a point and you're just watching this documentary for a while.
Mm-hmm.
Do you remember just like seeing the screens, and then it went into the greenhouse and then to the fish farms and stuff like that? So I thought that was cool. My favorite was seeing the vertical the plants and how they the vertical crop.
That's
my favorite.
That stuff is so cool. And then did you end up going into the Seas at all, the big aquarium that they have there?
Yes, I did. I walked through that just a little bit. Like this was all I made sure to do that side of the park before I went into the World Showcase. So I did walk around the aquarium. I thought the Nemo and Friends ride was awesome. It was really cool, because as soon as it transitions to, not giving it away, but there's this feature towards the end of the ride, and as soon as you see that transition and the combination of animation with the aquarium, it's really cool.
Teresa thought, said this is so much better than Finding Nemo Submarine Voyage.
I
110% agree.
Yeah.
And just the ride vehicles.
And I'm just surprised, because if you think about this, right? So first of all, it's the aquarium is so huge. Yeah. And so you think of that with like the land, and the land is so huge, and you're like, this park is massive, actually.
Yeah.
But if you think of just the Seas with Nemo and Friends, that is like what you would pay separate admission for, like in a city.
Yeah.
Like that's an aquarium inside of a park.
Inside of a park. And how cool is the queue as well. With the lighting. Again, I was like one of four people, because at this point, so my mom and I, we had split up. She wanted to go to France and I wanted to go finish the rides on that side. So we had split up, and again, I was like, briskly walking through, and it was it was Friday night. And I was told that a lot of locals go to Epcot at night for food and wine.
Yep.
And so the park doesn't really fill up until after six or something. And this is also one of the parks that stayed open fairly late, later than the others. So I was loving that, that I was able to just walk on.
Yeah. That's awesome. Yeah.
Did you go on Journey into Imagination with Figment? I know Teresa fell in love with that little guy.
I did. I love Figment. What I did, I will say that I was terrified of the actor's name who they project his face onto the moon.
Oh, the British guy who's like, the scientist.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, as you're leaving.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
That was a little freaky to me, just because that whole look was just kind of scary.
Yeah, I agree with you.
It was a little ooh.
But Figment's adorable.
That also has music that gets stuck in your head.
It does.
So
it felt very like wacky.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
So I'm assuming that you got to experience Frozen. So what did you think? You were looking forward to that one. Did it live up to expectations? What was your overall feel?
So I watched a video of Frozen as well. My mom and I actually watched a video of it on the plane. And we loved, just the fact that, I don't want to give too much away, but I think for me it was how accurate the animatronics were to the movie and just to the characters.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
The facial expressions were just amazing. You know, barring the Olaf, the eyes kind of tweaking out a little bit
in
the beginning.
For those of you on the podcast, Liberty had shared a video with us that she took on the ride, and Olaf was like, he must have had something in his eye or something, because he was blinking awfully fast.
Yeah, it was a little trippy. But beyond that, like because of the music is so great, and I'm a fan of the music in the movie. Just being immersed into that ride experience was awesome. And I think it was really cute too, just the queue and just how interactive the queue is once you get to that shop. And
Wandering Oakens.
Yeah. He's like in the sauna. And,
In that queue section, that's like the town square. That's
it's
so cute.
Beautiful.
Yeah. It's very cute. It's very cute. And I like how you start there, and as soon as you get in, like you're like brought into the movie, you know, right when you get into the building. So that's cute.
I never got to experience the original attraction that was in that space.
I could have. What was it? Maelstrom?
Maelstrom, yeah. So Maelstrom, people raved about it, but basically the experience is the same on this. They didn't change the track or anything.
Itself.
They just re-themed everything. So, but I thought the animatronics in that attraction were amazing. Olaf hopping around and Elsa waving her arms around and stuff.
The only thing I would have changed is I don't like the projected faces.
Yeah.
That's my only complaint.
Yeah. I can see that.
Yeah. I think the projected faces, like they were accurate and but I think it still took away some of the magic, or just like the magical aspect of it, because then you focused on how it didn't like quite match up with the sound or something. And then, but then I think what outweighed just like the look and feel of the ride experience itself kind of outweighed that.
Yeah.
Especially that fun little dip.
So
I think my favorite part was "Let It Go."
Yeah.
My favorite attraction in Epcot, or one of them, I guess I should say, is I really like Spaceship Earth. Did you go on Spaceship Earth?
Yes. So initially it was down, and I had read countless articles that this is the ride that often breaks down throughout the day. And so I thought, okay, I give up. And then as soon as I saw it come back up, there was like a 30-minute standby time. So I booked it over there, and it was interesting. I definitely, it was interesting.
I
wasn't
going
to say anything. I was just waiting for you because you're like, it's interesting, which is like, I didn't love it. It was just strange.
Yeah, I would say that. It wasn't my favorite, but I think I just was happy to be on that ride because, you know, it's like iconic and you go there, you go to Epcot, you got to ride it. So
I love Judi Dench, who does the narration.
Oh, yes, Judi Dench.
I love her and I love listening to her voice. So I think that's part of it for me is, you know, like thousands of years ago, this happened. And I'm like, oh, I could just sit here and nuzzle this forever. But
the thing I find amazing about that attraction is, yes, I agree. I think it needs a little TLC and a little sprucing up. But the fact that it all, like, it hurts my head to think that it all fits
in Spaceship,
in
Earth.
Spaceship Earth.
Yeah.
Like, that's just incredible to me.
It is cool. It's definitely a technological thing. So, of course, we have to ask you about food.
Oh, yes.
How was the Epcot food? What did you have?
My favorite was actually a few things. So I ate half of my dining experience was like food and wine. And then the other half was like just the things that you would buy in each pavilion or in each country. Mm-hmm. I really liked the Caribbean experience or Paradise experience booth. It was like Jamaican jerk chicken.
Mm.
Really savory, is so good. And then my second favorite was actually a drink. It was from Citrus Blossom, the like orange creamsicle drink that you can get in like the orange sipper. But I got it without alcohol. It was delicious. It tasted like orange Julius, if you ever had that.
Yum, oh, nice. Yeah.
And then another favorite of mine, I would have to say, was the lobster roll from the America Pavilion.
Oh.
It was so good. And the bread, I mean, it was meaty and it was a good, yeah, it was a good twist from like other things I had, you know, from earlier in the day. Cause it was just very savory.
I love lobster rolls, but I didn't have one of those. I should have though.
I remember you had been talking about it and then you like, talked yourself out of it.
Yeah. I don't know. But then did you go in the tent where they had the food, the stuff behind kind of like the, between like the UK and Canada, there was like a tent.
Oh no, I didn't. I didn't. I wanted to, but I ended up just going to some of the booths outside.
Because one of the things that I enjoyed was and we had a Polish exchange student, so this was good. The Poland pierogi stuff was so good because they had the sausage with it. It was so good. I would have that again. It's just unfortunate because that's the one thing about the bad thing about these like food fests is. Sometimes, like, that's the only time you're ever going to have whatever it is, you know?
Yeah.
Especially for us who are Disneyland fans, like, we're not going to go. Even if they have it again next year, we're probably not going to Epcot to, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So, it's just like,
I really liked the bao bun from Japan, too. Was it Japan? I think it was Japan. It was like it was some kind of bun.
Like a steam bun thing?
Yeah, like a steam bun. Mm-hmm. It was, that one was really good.
Those things are really good.
Yeah, it's what actually was recommended to by one of my friends who I met out there, who she's a local and pass holder. And she was like, every time we go to Epcot, we get this in Japan.
Wow.
So everything was just delicious. I would say like the one word to describe the Epcot experience was delicious.
Okay, so parks wise, from rank like best to worst.
I'll start with least because I like to end on a high note. Least would be Hollywood Studios.
Yeah.
Now, Rise of the Resistance and Mickey and Minnie's Railway, like, I isolate those two things in my mind. Those they're so extensive and they're also just out of this world amazing that I can't even think of, like, you know, just the general, like, Hollywood Studios park, like, in general. So I feel like those are separate, even though they're housed in there. And then from Hollywood Studios, I would say, definitely would have to be Epcot, Animal Kingdom, and then Magic Kingdom.
Well, Magic Kingdom, I feel like, is usually people's top thing because it has the most attractions. Yeah. It's the most like classic Disney experience. Yeah. It's the most like fleshed out, you know. Animal Kingdom's pretty close, theming-wise, for
I
sure.
I feel like Animal Kingdom and Magic Kingdom, the parks themselves, are just set up much nicer than especially Hollywood Studios. I think the design of Hollywood Studios just is not, it's just not a really nice
There's no good flow to
that park.
I agree with both of you. I think the park experience is, is a better, I get a better park experience from those two that mm-hmm. I mentioned, Animal and Magic. Even though there are some great new high-tech, like, you know, attractions at Epcot and at Hollywood, it's just overall, like, if you were to think about it, like, as a whole, mm-hmm. the better experiences, I think, were from Animal and Magic.
So let's quickly talk about, where did you stay and what did you think about your hotel?
Yeah, so I stayed at Coronado. We chose to do a moderate resort. I think there's like different types. It goes like value, moderate, and deluxe. Mm-hmm. And when we were working with James over at Concierge, we were close to pulling the trigger on Pop. But something about Coronado and watching a few more videos, he had sent over quite a few videos to watch and kind of get the layout. After watching the videos and realizing that this was going to be our first trip, we really kind of wanted to make it special. And I wanted to give my mom a really special experience. So we decided to do Coronado, and that resort was beautiful. Even though it's a bus resort, which I have some thoughts on Disney transportation, it's a challenge, but we made it through. And even though it's further away from, you know, the parks, it's closest to Magic, to Animal Kingdom. Mm-hmm. We felt like the resort itself, the experience, the resort experience at Coronado was great. And
yeah.
It was also one of the hotels that didn't have as many guests. So I felt like it was really easy and I felt comfortable to walk around. And
oh yeah, that's good.
Take advantage of resort amenities because it wasn't as populated as, say, I think we did some resort tours and Contemporary was really busy. The Caribbean was super busy. And so was like, yeah, a couple of the other ones over by Epcot. So
did you, I just gathered this from some of your comments. Did you end up doing something through Concierge, like one of those dining tour things, or did they set you up on something like that? Or
Yeah. So we actually did. After seeing the tour that you all did, I was super impressed and I wanted to do that too. I was like, James, how do you like, just set this up for my mom and I, because we want to do the same thing. We didn't get to go to the Poly though, because it was closed.
Yeah.
Oh.
And at that time there wasn't much to see. The renovations were, I think they had just opened it up for DVC members. We did the exact same tour and we got a chance. I don't know if you went to the Riviera.
Mm-mm. We didn't. No.
Yeah, we did. We made sure to go to a few like Skyliner resorts too, so we could do, you know, the Skyliner experience, mm-hmm. or have that. And so I think before the California Grill dining reservation, we made sure to stop by a few places just to grab some photos and just check out their lobby in hopes that there were holiday decorations, but there actually weren't any. Mm-hmm. And so that's why Coronado was so special, because it was one of the few hotels that actually had holiday, you know, decor while we were there.
Oh, yeah. It is kind of sad to think, because there's some really amazing holiday decor and some really kind of like iconic and like traditions that they do there. Yeah. So I'm thinking of like the gingerbread house,
yeah,
that they build every year in the lobby of the Grand Floridian. Like it's sad, you know, it's very sad to think that those things aren't there. But, yeah, you know, I understand. So that's extra magic, a little extra like dash of magic that you didn't even realize when you were booking your resort. So that's pretty cool.
Yeah, absolutely.
I'm just looking at pictures of the Coronado Springs
Resort.
It looks
amazing. Very beautiful. Pop Century was fun. Definitely was fun. It like had kind of like the retro vibes with all like
it was
larger
exactly
than life characters.
What we needed for our trip. We just needed a bed on property, and we weren't really there that much.
Yeah, I wanted to go there just to see the layout and the pool area, but also just like those ginormous,
yeah,
they're yeah, fun,
but yeah, those gigantic like sculptures and the animation that looked really
for
fun.
Me, I think like growing up when I would see travel videos and like I think they used to send like a VHS cassette to like try and get your family to book your Walt Disney World, mm-hmm, vacation. I remember seeing those larger than life, like that was one of the new,
oh, yeah,
hotels, right? And I remember seeing those larger than life animated characters, and so to me that was like It was very cool to actually go there and actually see them in person and experience them, because that was like what I like remembered growing up and being like in awe and like, wow, I wish one day I could stay there, yeah, kind of thing. So I thought it was great. Yeah. Now, it wasn't like a full-fledged resort like what I'm seeing the Coronado is. The Coronado seems like you could spend all sorts of time hanging out and chilling and doing all sorts of fun activities there versus maybe what the Pop Century offers. But then again, we didn't really explore it that much. We just kind of slept there and got ready there and like went to the parks. So
yeah. And normally, so like typically if I go, if I do like a solo trip, or if like Shane and I go, we just need a place to sleep. Mm-hmm. But I knew like I wanted to have some kind of resort experience that was like meaningful. And it was also just like enjoyable on the days that we knew we weren't going to be in the park. Or on the days we knew the park would close like at 5 p.m. and we still mm-hmm. had like, you know, we're used to like staying, I don't know about you two, but I'm used to staying in the park till close, even a little yeah. bit after.
Yeah. Yeah.
At Disneyland, you know, I stay until like 12 and then like we go over to Downtown Disney and do World of Disney. So I knew that because hours were adjusted, we would want to like do some, have some time in the resort and like hang out there and see what they had to offer, which still was limited. I will say like not very much was open mm-hmm. In the resort in terms of food. But what was open was really good. Like the restaurant out there. And then they still had the gift shop, like every hotel or every resort has that gift shop. It was very like at times when I would just walk around, cause it's also a convention hotel. Like there's a convention space for,
yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So it felt like eerie kind of walking through the hallways being closed. Kind of sad, but also like, wow, this is interesting. Like, I don't think I'm going to ever experience this again, like, and just be able to walk through a Disney resort on my own or trying to get some ice or something or trying to, you know, but buying breakfast. So it was cool in that sense.
Very cool.
So what would you say to anybody listening to this that is maybe thinking about going to Disney World? Is it something you would recommend right now with everything? Is it something that maybe you would say to hold on, you know, pause or wait? Or I guess what's your, if somebody were to ask you, what would you say?
I would say definitely think about what's best for you and your family. I know both of you have said this too, like it's really based on your comfort level. And just know the things you should know before you go, obviously do some research, talk to people that have gone, and be ready and prepared to be okay with like safety guidelines, especially safety guidelines that are actually a little bit more strict than like when they first opened up in like the summer, mm-hmm. because they've now seen, you know, the Disney team has now seen like what's worked and what hasn't. And so like I'd said, I mentioned in the chat earlier that when I came across an article about a ride pausing that actually happened on the Jungle Cruise because someone, you know, just for whatever reason had to like take their mask off. And I think they had to drink really quickly. But they paused the ride because they wanted to just enforce the mask on rule, even on the rides. And I think just get ready to, if you are going to go, get ready to experience some of that, some of those reminders. They're friendly and they're still respectful, but there are reminders from cast members, even while you're taking photos, to keep your masks on. There's a lot of like friendly, but respectful, like hand holding when it comes to like how to like walk around the park too, and like where to wait and where to sit. And that's just because they're doing their best to do their job and keep everyone safe. Mm-hmm. The other thing I would say about travel in general, know that like when you're going to Disney World, you know, I obviously listened to some of your experience and I asked questions. So like ask a lot of questions, but also read through and do your own research about like what's going to be required of you at your resort. And then also be prepared to like go at a time when like you're okay to like obviously think about the time of year. And like make sure you're okay to like wear your mask most of the day in the Florida heat or the Florida humidity. And then also be prepared to not have as many maybe like dining options, although that probably has changed now, obviously. but be prepared to you know, make those reservations, and obviously you'll have to stick to them. But also if anything changes, I remember we needed to add a third to one of our dining parties, and they were just really adamant that that change has to happen. You need to let us know of that change, because we're mindful of every person in your party and getting people in and out and safely.
Aside from the, you know, interesting times to be visiting the park.
Yeah.
Would you still recommend it just a normal, you know, normal times? Would you recommend a normal Disneyland super fan like we all are? Would you would you recommend them to go and try it, or do you think, no, you're good with Disneyland?
I would recommend at least once. If you're able to and you find a great deal at a resort on or off property or a partner hotel, definitely take advantage of it if you can. And definitely try and, I know things have changed now because park hopping is going to be, you know, available starting January, but I still recommend doing one park a day, because there's so much as a first timer, even just being in that Disney bubble in Orlando. I felt I needed to take it all in and go slow. And I think that this is just a unique time where you can do that and you can go slow and kind of take the park in and all of the sights and sounds. One thing I will also add is if you have enough time to also visit the resorts and go to, you know, resort hop and just kind of check those out, do that, because they're also really beautiful, and they're so unique, the decorations in each one. I think that's it. I think if you have a chance to make it out there, definitely work. I recommend working with, if you're new to the Walt Disney World planning, definitely work with a travel agency, unless you have, you know, friends and family that go often, or they're pass holders or something that you know of that you can talk to. But if it wasn't for James and the whole concierge team, I think we would be struggling to make to confirm plans and, you know, dining and all of that. And just I created a whole itinerary. Because that's just how I am. But that was so helpful. Now, again, did we follow everything once we were there? Probably not too much, but just having the plan was helpful.
I'm glad that there's somebody coming on the podcast who has experienced the same thing we have, which is concierge helping out and things, and that it was a good experience for you. And I know that in the chat, we've had some people talk about how they've worked with James and concierge, and it's been a good experience. We've never had anybody on the show talking about it. So yeah, I think it's very helpful for people to hear that there's a real life person who's a listener who experienced this and had a great experience with it. So I'm glad that you ended up using their services and you had a great trip.
Yeah, me
too.
It
is really amazing how much stress it takes off of your plate to have them helping you with.
Yeah.
I don't know. I mean, right, we're Disneyland people, so we know Disneyland better than we know the back of our hand, better than we may know our own partners in life. But but you know, Disney World just seems massive in comparison and intimidating. So it was really nice to have the concierge sort of on our side and helping out and helping navigate all of that, even just with tips or recommendations, all sorts of stuff.
Well, that whole monorail dining trip thing was super cool.
It was amazing, yes.
So
yeah. I would add the same thing. It's one less thing you have to worry about. And when dining plans changed, or when there were updates to our itinerary, you know, my concierge person, James was the first to know and then tell us, and we don't have to do as much interaction with the Disney travel company, or not the travel company, but just with the Disney team cast members.
Sure. You could just chill and things are getting taken care of.
Yeah. And I think for something like Disneyland, of course, I wouldn't need as much support and handholding for that, but because it was such a new experience for both of us, for my mom and I, we needed that kind of guidance.
Yeah. So we've arrived at our final question. If you could work at Disneyland and have any job you want, real or made up, what would you do and why?
This one's a tough one. However, I just had a new documentary kind of confirm it for me, but I've been watching Inside Pixar.
Oh, yes.
And I really liked the role of one of the individuals who works in the character art development. This was a person that was a character art director.
Oh, mm-hmm.
Yeah. And I think that job, but I would like that role, but for the attractions. And I know, like, I'm wondering if that's just, well, that must be an Imagineer, but something about the character, like, origins and the mm-hmm. development of characters is really intriguing to me. So I think I would like to do that, but for the characters in the attraction, like, themselves. So, for example, like, if, as I know, Ratatouille is, you know, developing in, over mm-hmm. at Epcot or over at the France Pavilion, I would love to be on the team to help develop Ratatouille's experience or just like other supporting characters on.
Yeah.
Because I think some, just from hearing some of the interview from the D23 Fantastic Worlds panel, how like the film folks and then the Imagineers work together. Like I would love to be on the team, obviously from the film mm-hmm. world, but then like have a huge hand and direction in the, how it kind of manifests in the parks.
Yeah, no, that would be an awesome job. I have not watched the Pixar show yet on Disney Plus. I honestly just keep forgetting about it.
It's so good. You need to watch
it. And I was devastated that they were already done with the Animal Kingdom show. It was only 8 episodes. And it was Saturday. I went to turn it on to watch while I was eating lunch. And I was like, there's not a new episode. There's not a new episode. And then I went and looked at the premieres for this week and it was gone. And I was like, I guess there was only 8 episodes.
Yes. I really like that show too. I looked forward to the new episodes and I really enjoyed watching it too while I was out there.
Well, Liberty, thank you so much for joining us tonight and speaking about your Disney World experience. I'm sure that we just touched the tip of the iceberg of your trip, but, I think we didn't want to have 4 or 5 episodes like happen with us. So thank you so much for coming on and sharing your tips and your experience with people. And hopefully people will, you know, if they've been waiting to pull the trigger, maybe you convince them to pull the trigger. Or if they had never thought about it, maybe they are now. So thank you.
I hope so. Thank you. Thank you for having me. And I really enjoyed like reliving my experience.
Awesome. Thank you, Liberty.
Bye. Thank you.
Now it's time to return to Trivia Land with producer James to get the answers to this week's trivia. James, how did we do? Did we do well? Did we get the easy ones that you said? I don't know.
Oh, we'll find out, right? earlier this year, our first question. Earlier this year, a petition got several hundred signatures to rename a certain location in Disneyland. Can you tell me where? And thanks to the hint of thinking of the longest-serving employee, you got the Carnation Cafe correct.
Yay!
Oscar. Yeah, I don't know if they necessarily had a title in mind, but they did want it to be named after Oscar Martinez, who retired in 2017. Oscar Martinez, not to be confused with the character from The Office. Very different people. Question number 2 came from listener Liberty M. She asked, who was the voice of Eagle Sam for America Sings in Disneyland? Good job, community. It is indeed Burl Ives.
Way to go, listeners.
Yeah, that was like our lifeline, right?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Can we call a friend or a chat?
Question number 3 was asking how many fake snakes are in the Indiana Jones attraction. I, as an educator, I want to reward Teresa's creativity for all of them. but you are off by about 2,000 snakes.
Wow.
There's 2,000 snakes in
2,000
there?
2,000 fake snakes.
Wow.
Where are they?
In the dark, waiting to attack.
That was almost as good as all of them, James.
Almost. Fun fact. So obviously this took inspiration from the films. The scene with all the snakes in Raiders of the Lost Ark originally only had about 2,000 in it as well. But Steven Spielberg said that wouldn't cut it and sent all of his people out to pet stores and everywhere else they could find. And a couple days later, they had a 10,000 snake count on set.
Wow.
That's crazy.
So 2,000 might not cut it. Who knows? And our last question. Pins have been at the park since opening, but pin trading became a thing much later. When? Tag way to trust your gut. It started in October 1999.
Yeah.
And it coincided with the launch of the Millennium Celebration.
Ooh.
Interesting. So it launched before the Millennium launched.
Yeah. Nice.
Very interesting.
I knew it was something in the 90s, but then I knew we also just had that thing where it was the 20th anniversary. Maybe it was the 20th anniversary at Disney World? Did they do it later than us?
They both launched about the same time. Oh. There's some discrepancies on exactly when, but according to the Disneyland pin trading website, it says October 1999.
Well, they would
Lee,
know.
Does anyone know where these snakes are? I'm with you, Lee. I don't, like, I have not noticed all of these snakes. I've noticed the one.
Maybe they're in the lava pit and you just don't see them.
They must be, like, curled up on rocks and stuff all over the place and you can't, like... Someone in the shadow, so they're not really in focal points. Are we going to watch a POV now?
After we're done recording.
You're making me doubt myself, and we'll continue to look this one up again.
Oh, no, we believe you. It's just like, where have we not been paying attention to these creepy snakes?
I enjoyed coming up with most of the questions this week and asking some, at least one great listener question. We've got a few more set up, but we'd love to keep asking yours on the show. You can send us an email. It's trivia@dlweekly.net.
So in the spirit of Thanksgiving, we wanted to say thank you to all of our listeners, all of our supporters, all of the different weekly tiers that are out there. We love you guys, even though we haven't met most of you. We can't wait to get back to the parks to hang out with you and meet you. This community has been just amazing. It's crazy that it's only been 3 years, and we just are so blessed and so thankful that we have been able to create this and talk Disney with you guys every week. We learn so many fun and interesting things from all of you guys as well.
Especially the trivia people. Yeah.
We hope that sometimes you maybe learn something new from us too, but we have a blast doing this for you guys every week, and we look forward to creating more wonderful, fun episodes for you guys to listen to.
Absolutely. Thanks for remembering that, Teresa, because I didn't even think about it. There is some stuff coming out to you guys, though. So if you are a supporter, you will be getting a Christmas card or a holiday card from us.
Yeah, we have some holiday surprises for our supporters, so definitely be on the lookout for that. We will be back next week with more Disneyland news and information.
Until then, have courage, be kind, and spread some Disney magic. Don't eat too much turkey if you're in the U.S.
Happy Thanksgiving.
Ladies and gentlemen, Disneyland has now ended its normal operating day. We hope you've enjoyed your visit to the Magic Kingdom and that you'll be back with us again soon.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.